From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week, Tracy Wilkinson, staff writer for the Los Angeles Times. Our moderator is the White House correspondent for the Weekly Standard, Michael Warren.
Welcome, everyone. Here are the issues. In New York, Washington, Florida, and elsewhere in the United States this week, packages containing what appeared to be bombs were sent to multiple political and media figures. President Trump last weekend accused Russia of violating a landmark nuclear weapons agreement and vowed the United States would withdraw, prompting sharp criticism from Russian President Vladimir Putin. A caravan of several thousand Central Americans continues to make its way north through Mexico on the way to the U.S. border, where President Trump has vowed to deploy additional U.S. troops. Finally, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia continues to change its story on the death of journalist and regime critic Jamal Khashoggi, as the United States says it's revoking visas of Saudi nationals and considering sanctions. Well, let's turn first, Tracy, to this story that has been rocking New York, Washington, D.C., appears to Florida as well. These packages sent to a number of Democratic political figures, media figures, all of which have been critical or in opposition to President Trump. These packages that appear to be they appear to be bombs. Investigators are still not sure exactly if they were intended to explode. But a sense this past week in these places of terror and fear and rising political violence. What do we see here?
Well, indeed, we don't know if these were meant to explode or not, but it's almost beside the point. They've had their effect of scaring people, terrorizing people. The random nature of something just showing up, you know, in your mailbox one morning is I think something that really goes to a core fear of a lot of people. And you're right, there have been a very high profile, an A-list of mostly, I guess, all Democrats, and two former presidents, two former first ladies, but also former Secretary of State, and CNN. So it's very scary. They don't know who is doing this. It seems they're focusing now on Florida as a potential starting place where these packages have been sent from. But it does reflect a broader sense of political tension and even violence. President Trump initially condemned this and called for unity, but within 24 hours, he was again attacking the media particularly. And he has been blamed for stoking a lot of this anger and tension because he does tend to attack in very base terms his opposition.
And we should point out who exactly has been sent or who these packages have been addressed to. It's former President Barack Obama, former Democratic presidential candidate, Secretary of State, and First Lady Hillary Clinton, of course, a House that she shares with her husband, Bill Clinton, the former president. We've learned that Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey, a Democrat, Maxine Waters,
of California, yes,
a congresswoman, Democrat as well. The package that was sent to CNN was addressed actually to a former Democratic appointee and CIA director, John Brennan, who actually is not an employee of CNN, but an employee of a competitor, MSNBC. And this isn't, of course, the first in recent years demonstration of political violence, of going after high-profile politicians. Of course, nobody was hurt in these bombs this week. We know nearly over a year ago, a Republican, Steve Scalise, who's the third-ranking Republican in the House of Representatives, was shot by somebody who was revealed was motivated by political violence. There's a sense that, Tracy, that there's an undercurrent of violence, that it's simply not disagreements going on right now in the United States, but people are being motivated by perhaps extremists in the partisan media to take violent measures against their political opponents.
Right. We saw in the white supremacist marches that we've seen where, in fact, someone was killed
in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Last year. Yeah, it is. It's a very tense moment. And I think, you know, we talk a lot about this polarized, divided country and that, you know, feeds extremes. And that's what this is. As you say, no one has been hurt yet. And, you know, there have been past in history, people have actually been killed in political violence. So we've not reached that point. But But still, the kind of pervasive nature of it seems particularly troubling right now. One other person you didn't mention who's received one of these packages is George Soros, who is often pointed to by the right as a, you know, he does support a lot of progressive causes, pro-democracy causes all over the world, and he's become quite a target for many on the right. So he also received one of these packages. So again, it's very troubling, and it's hard to know where it ends, and it's hard to know so far who is behind this, but obviously that's what they are urgently working on.
And Tracy, you mentioned quickly President Trump's initial reaction was obviously condemn what happened and condemn political violence. But the president continues to go after CNN in particular as fake news, referring to members of the media as enemies of the people in the United States. There does seem to be a specific targeting by this president of the media. He's, of course, not called for specific acts of violence against the media. I mean, he has encouraged a current Republican House member who roughed up a journalist in a special election last year, has encouraged him. So there does seem to be a direct link here to the president himself and encouraging violence against journalists.
Yes, I think he does encourage violence against journalists by exactly that sort of thing. This congressman who had body slammed a journalist, and Trump just the other day says that, you know, he's my guy, and, you know, you don't want to tangle with him. And in rallies, my colleagues who cover these rallies say that, you know, they are singled out, the media, the reporters are singled out, pointed at, insulted, you know, there was a sign I saw the other day of, you know, CNN is ISIS, this kind of thing, where it really is ugly. It is ugly. And I'm surprised we haven't seen more incidents of violence against journalists.
Well, shifting from political violence to sort of the kind of world civilization-ending violence that could happen from nuclear weapons, the president has talked about in the last several days pulling out of a nuclear weapons agreement that was initially brokered between the United States and the Soviet Union, remains in place with the successor state of the Soviet Union, Russia. Talk to me a little bit about what President Trump's getting at here. He's talking about a buildup. He wants the United States to make more nuclear weapons, causing a lot of consternation around the world, and particularly with Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia.
Yes, indeed. Now, President Trump has a point in that Russia has been violating the treaty and has for years been violating the treaty. Most of your, you know, nuclear arms proliferation experts say, however, it's better to stay in a treaty and try to work to get both sides to obey it rather than just walking away from the treaty. But that seems to be this president's mode of operation. He is frequently walking out of treaties that he doesn't like rather than trying to improve those treaties. This is particularly frightening because he, you know, follows the announcement of a withdrawal from the treaty with this announcement, as you mentioned, of building up more nuclear weapons. And I don't think anyone in the world is too comfortable with that right now, including the U.S. military is not particularly happy about, you know, a building up of a nuclear arsenal, further building it up. Now, whether he'll really do that, obviously, with this president, it's hard to know.
Right.
He says a lot of things, but it is a tone and a message that has got Putin nervous and many of our own allies, of the U.S. allies in Europe, who would be, of course, particularly vulnerable.
Now, President Trump's supporters or defenders might say, well, look, the president has threatened, as you said, Tracy, to pull out of other agreements, NAFTA being a primary one, the North American Free Trade Agreement. And they would say this is a negotiation tactic. This is a way for him to shake things up, to get people sort of out of their comfort zones and look at what the United States has now brokered, a new trade agreement. Some would say it's not very substantively different from NAFTA, but he has a new trade agreement with Mexico and Canada. Is perhaps this the way that what President Trump really is getting at here is to sort of shake the world to recognize Russia's violations of this existing treaty and try to get a little better enforcement?
Perhaps. And that is his tactic often, to come out swinging and then ultimately agree to a deal. As you mentioned, the NAFTA deal that they came up with ultimately was not that. It was a modernized NAFTA deal, which is what everyone wanted. And he managed to anger Canada and Mexico in the course of that process, unnecessarily, right, some would say. And so is that really the best way to go about negotiating? And then now we're talking about nuclear weapons, and that is so much more potentially dangerous than a trade agreement, I think. You know, as you said, destruction of the world. And so one would think that one might want to be more careful in negotiating that sort of treaty.
Now, would a buildup of more nuclear weapons in the U.S. arsenal, this would, of course, require congressional approval, right? I mean, these would be appropriations that would have to be approved by Congress. But there's no sense that President Trump has done anything on Capitol Hill to sort of lay the groundwork for any kind of new appropriations or maybe even new legislation authorizing this kind of buildup. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I don't think he would get a lot. It wouldn't be a really great reception on Capitol Hill, I think, to do this. But, you know, he the other day said he's going to pass a tax cut in the next couple of weeks, and Congress isn't even in session.
Right.
So these are details that President Trump doesn't always pay attention to. But
it may not be grasped even by people like Vladimir Putin. The threat itself may be enough to prompt action or a change in what Russia is doing, but it does seem to be maybe a lot of smoke and not much fire underneath.
Yeah, potentially. And you know, we'll have to see, as Trump always says. But I think it is a little bit of bluster right now. And as I say, I doubt Congress would be really eager to go along with this.
Well, we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with more Issues in the News after this.
You're listening to Issues in the News on the Voice of America from Washington. You can find our program on the VOA website at www.voanews.com. You may also download a free podcast of the program by clicking on the iTunes tab on our webpage. Again, that's voanews.com. Then click on the Listen tab and go to our broadcast programs. You may also visit us on our Facebook page, Current Affairs with Carol Castillo. There you can find links to other programs like Encounter and Press Conference USA. Now, back to our panel. Tracy Wilkinson, staff writer for the Los Angeles Times. Our moderator is Michael Warren, the White House correspondent for the Weekly Standard.
And Tracy, let's talk now about this caravan, which is a homeland security issue, an immigration issue, an election issue as well, a midterm election coming up. And the president and Republicans seem to be trying to make an issue of this group of Central Americans, appears to be diminishing in number, who are supposedly walking toward the U.S. border now through Mexico on foot. What exactly is happening with this caravan of people? Is it anything different than what we've seen before? Is it the same as what we've seen before? And does it pose, as the president has suggested, any kind of threat to American sovereignty?
I think it is similar to what we've seen before. These are mostly Central Americans. Nicaraguans is the new element, but mostly Salvadorans, Hondurans, and Guatemalans, who are fleeing countries that are very violent and very poor. And so these are people who are both economic migrants, but also potential refugees, asylum seekers, because of the violence in their home countries. They are at least a month away in terms of walking across Mexico. President Trump is trying to, I think, stoke fear in that these people are about to arrive any minute, this onslaught, as is the word he has used. And he's also suggested there are unknown Middle Easterners among them, which, again, is a way to, you know, code word for terrorists. And I think that I think it's kind of dangerous to use that sort of rhetoric. I don't think it's true.
Although the president, when pressed on this issue, said he actually this week that he had no proof that there were any Middle Easterners or terrorists within this caravan.
Correct. And they're also trying to say that this was all is orchestrated by the left of Honduras. And I've asked for evidence of that as well and gotten no response. Secretary of State Pompeo has also used those phrases, and I get no explanation of their proof for that. So is it a, you know, it will pose, if they eventually do arrive at the border, there will be an issue of how these people are processed. President Trump apparently wants to seal the border against them, not even let them enter the legal avenues to seek asylum. He apparently is ordering more U.S. troops to the border.
We learned this week, Jim Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, who behind the scenes has sort of been opposed to this idea, but I think has acquiesced to what the Commander-in-Chief has requested, sending something between 800 and 1,000 U.S. troops, members of the United States military, to the border, where there are already a number of National Guardsmen,
yes.
and of course the Border Patrol, which is always there.
Correct. And again, I'm not sure. In the past, when the military has gone down there, they end up really doing support work, humanitarian work,
right,
rather than actual enforcement of immigration regulations, which I don't think they legally are supposed to do anyway. So it's a bit of a show. Is it really necessary? That's debatable.
Well, I think there's this question, too. I think a practical question is, if this group of people, which I think at one point was about 7,000, is now not quite cut by half from that number of people staying behind or being stopped in Mexico, if they do arrive at the border, it does present, if there's asylum seekers, a bit of a logistical problem, right? It's a large group of people coming to perhaps one port of entry. Is there any sense that the federal government is preparing for actually processing them? Or is it true that the president is going to get his way and would be able to get his way and essentially turn them away before they cross in or even try to seek asylum?
I think the latter is very possible. I think that already resources are pretty stretched pretty thin along the border in terms of processing any kind of applicants, refugee, asylum seekers. So I do think that there is a great potential for quite a bottleneck of people trying to get in. In the past, there's been a need for more judges, more immigration judges, and those needs have not been met. So I do not think that a lot of people can be processed very quickly.
Now, this is, as we alluded to earlier, not the first caravan of this type to try to enter the United States in a large group by foot. What is it that really drives these caravans? Why are they under the impression, maybe in particularly this time, knowing who the President of the United States is and some of his rhetoric, why are they under the impression that this is something that could work or might work for them to be able to enter the country and seek refugee status?
Well, there are a couple of things. One is the level of desperation. These are countries with some of the highest homicide rates in the world, with very few opportunities, very corrupt governments and institutions. So there's a very high level of desperation. That's one thing. Another thing is they've seen it does work sometimes. You know, people do get through, and they've heard from their relatives that they do get through. There are a lot of misimpressions about how easy it is. I remember in 2014, I was down there covering that caravan that year, and a lot of messages were going back to the home country saying, if you just get here, you'll be allowed in. And that wasn't true, but it did motivate a lot of people to try. It's been up to Mexico to stop a lot of these people. And for a while, Mexico was doing that. But I think now even Mexico has sort of pulled back a bit and is letting people cross. So they see a chance and go for it, as dangerous and precarious as it is.
Well, let's switch gears finally to talk about what has sort of concerned Middle East watchers and those watching the administration's response to the death of Jamal Khashoggi, who's a Saudi journalist killed in the Saudi embassy in Turkey. Finally, there is the Saudi government has admitted that it happened. He was killed after a long several days of not even acknowledging that. The story from the Saudi government continues to change. And the United States government, meanwhile, seems to be taking at least perfunctory measures to indicate its displeasure with the Saudis on this issue. What do we know at this point? What are the Saudis admitting to being involved in the death of this dissident in their own embassy?
Yes, in their consulate in Istanbul. Yes. Well, there, as you say, their story has been shifting quite a bit. For 2 weeks, they denied that he was even there. They said that Khashoggi had left the same day he arrived into the consulate, and then eventually, after about 2 weeks, and as you know, information was being leaked through the Turkish press that indicated pretty clearly he had been brutally murdered inside the building. They did finally admit that yes, he was killed in the consulate, and tried to say that it was a group of officers exceeding their mandate, exceeding their powers, who were just trying to question him. But then he died. They killed him. First, it was a heart attack, and then it was a fight, and just, you know, one thing after another. Nothing particularly plausible. And they're mostly trying to deny responsibility of the crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, whose people were involved in this killing. And so where they stand now is they've accepted the information from Turkey that it was premeditated, although they are not saying it was premeditated. They are saying they understand this is the Turkish version, and they will continue to investigate. They still have not produced the body. They claim that the body was given to a local collaborator, and they don't know where the body is. Again, very implausible in my view. And as their story has been shifting, so has the Trump administration reaction been shifting. Initially, President Trump seemed very willing to take the Saudis at their word. Eventually, he realized that this was a very serious atrocity, and has been more critical.
Pressed in many ways by Capitol Hill, a number of senators, even within his own party,
exactly. Very, a lot of anger. Khashoggi was well known in Washington circles. He was a guest columnist for the Washington Post, so he's quite well known. He made the circuits of the think tanks, so he was well known and I think quite respected. Then finally, as you mentioned, the administration has revoked visas for 21 Saudis they say were identified as suspects in the case, coming from security services and government, even the royal court, they said. But, you know, the visas for people who weren't going to be coming to the United States anyway, if they're even alive still, really is hardly a slap on the wrist.
Now, what about sanctions? There's only been talk, not actual action on sanctions
from
the State Department.
There has been talk from the State Department, exactly. Congress activated the Magnitsky Act, which allows for sanctions in the case of human rights violations. A lot of these are in place against Russians, for example. But it takes 120 days, I believe it is, before they can be actually imposed. So that's a long way off. But that is one possibility, and that would hurt a little more. But I think there is a willingness in the administration, or at least a hope, that this will kind of go away, because they keep stressing the importance of this critical strategic partner that is Saudi Arabia.
And the Saudis have long been an American ally, but particularly in this current administration of the United States, has embraced the new crown prince, 33-year-old Mohammed bin Salman, who, as you mentioned, Tracy, has connections to the people who are accused of killing Jamal Khashoggi. This seems to have risks diminishing the crown prince's own influence within his own country. Do we have any sense that the United States or this administration is backing away, particularly from its two-year-long embrace of him?
Hard to see. So far, Jared Kushner, who was particularly friendly with him, with the crown prince, the other day was asked on CNN about this, and he said, well, I'm encouraging the crown prince to be transparent. Well, that doesn't sound like much of an attempt to distance oneself. It may be, though, that the prince is tainted permanently and that he will not be able to continue. I don't know. It's hard to say. It's hard to predict in Saudi Arabia. It's really up to the king, Salman, his father, who would have to replace him as the heir.
And who passed over two of his older sons in order to give it to the 33-year-old.
To Mohammed, yes. And there is no structure for, removal or for impeachment or anything like that, obviously. It's a monarchy. And so I'm also told that King Salman isn't in the best of health.
Right.
So would he really have the wherewithal, the strength to mount what would have to be a fight to replace Muhammad.
Well, we'll keep watching this and, of course, all the other issues we discussed. But that's all the time we have this week. Thanks to Tracy Wilkinson, staff writer for the Los Angeles Times. This program is produced by VOA's Current Affairs. Our engineer is Justin Thwaites, and I'm Michael Warren, White House correspondent for the Weekly Standard.